Okay, we're studying in Galatians chapter 5, and we're looking at, we're contrasting, or going to be contrasting the fruits, the deeds of the flesh and fruits of the Spirit. And we're looking at the deeds of the flesh at this point, and we've mentioned this before, but some may say, why are we, you know, why are we interested in this? Why don't we feel like we really need to spend time on this? We're all Christians here. You know, we've got good marriages, basically, and we're going to be okay. And those of us maybe who aren't are either we're never going to get married or we know all this. Because we've talked in this class before about that we have seen people that we know and love that have fallen into this temptation and into this sin. So we're trying to look at and understand what these words mean. And at the end of this word, we're going to look at some things that we can do personally in our lives to help us avoid this sin, to keep us to where we are today, where we won't be tempted. We have one young lady here who is not married, and she's going to be seeking a husband. And we need to try to help her understand what kind of young man she needs to choose so her life will be what she wants it to be, what her dream is on her wedding day. Okay, we're looking at sensuality or lasciviousness. Before we look at the definitions, let's look at Romans 13 and 13. Betty Yoakum, would you read that, please?
Behave properly as in the day, not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual promiscuity and sensuality, not in strife and jealousy.
Okay, so when we start looking at this word to see what the meaning of it is, what we're going to keep in mind is this is something that you don't do in the daylight. This is things, whatever we're talking about are things that you really don't want people to know about. It's hidden in the dark. We think our society has gotten so bad, is this even true anymore? Are the things that we're talking about things that are just done in the night and in the hidden part anymore? No. And that's what's so scary about it and what's so dangerous about it, because we have become accustomed to seeing these kind of things. And the push for homosexuality to be accepted as simply an alternative lifestyle, God made me this way, there's nothing I can do about it. And so if we're not careful, we don't even consider it. So when we read this verse, and it talks about the sexual promiscuity and sensuality, we think, well, it must not be that, because this goes on all the time. This is something that's very prevalent. But it's things that should be done in the night, things that people usually used to do to hide, and some people still do. There are still people in the closet. There are still affairs that go on for years that the other mate doesn't know about. But we need to realize that we don't want to become callous. We want to keep these things in our mind and on our mind and on our heart so we know what they are and what we're to avoid. Let's look at 2 Peter. One more thing before we leave there, you probably already have. This is a not but thing. Verse 13 says, not in strife and, there's several nots here. He goes on to say, let us behave properly as in the day, not in carousing and drunkenness and sexual promiscuity, and not in strife and jealousy. But the most important thing we can do, remember, it's not saying that these things aren't forbidden, but the most important thing comes after the but. And it's but put on the Lord Jesus Christ. And we're going to see when we start talking about what we can do to avoid these sins in our life. This is one of the most important things that we can do, is put on Jesus Christ. If we have Jesus Christ in his armor and we're living as the way he has taught us, that's going to be a great help. Okay, now let's look at 2 Peter chapter 2. Elizabeth, can you read 6 through 8, please?
And if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made them an example to those who will live ungodly thereafter, And if he rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men, for by what he saw and heard that righteous men, while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day with their lawless deeds.
Okay. And then he read verse 9 also. I didn't have that on there, but...
I didn't have that copy.
Okay. Okay, I'll read it. Then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and keep the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment. God, my point with this is, yes, even Lot, who lived in the most, you know, when you think of an immoral city and people, they always talk about Sodom and Gomorrah. And sometimes you'll hear a city called. Well, it's just another Sodom and Gomorrah there. But Lot did not get involved in this. Lot was continued to be a righteous man, and God rewarded him for that and rescued him. And that's one thing we always need to remember. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 10:13.
You know, as we look at the definition, word there in 2 Peter, unprincipled, sensual, lawless deeds of the ungodly.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we look at that, we can see what dangers that even we, you know, and as we teach our children and try to get our children to make, because of what the definition really means, mm-hmm. that's the category of which we are taking in and what we become if we, you know, do that. So those words are not... it's just a little off color, or it's just a little bit lewd, or it may be just a little bit sensual, you know, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. But as we look at the definition, mm-hmm. those words are really harsh.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 1 Corinthians 10:13. Everybody knows this probably by heart. No temptation has overtaken you but such as common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted above, beyond what you are able, but with temptation will provide the way to escape also, so that you will be able to endure it. If Lot can endure what he endured, this was a sexual thing. Lot was living among very, very wicked people, and yet Lot remained righteous. And when it came time for God to destroy the city, if he's going to take Lot by the hand and lead him out, what makes me think that when I'm in a situation that God won't give me the strength and the power? There's a whole world around me, at least there's a whole world that's very wicked, but we have a very special part, our brethren, that we can be with. If we choose them to be our friends, if we choose those people who are righteous to be with, then when I have to be with the unrighteous, whether I'm at work or involved with my children at school, whatever the situation is, I have a lot better opportunity. How am I going to stand in front of Lot in the day of judgment and say, well, it was just so wicked I couldn't endure it, when there stands Lot, who in all of this that was going on in Sodom and Gomorrah, and yet he remained righteous? And so these are things that we need to think about when we're looking at things that we want to complain about. Elizabeth?
You know, Lot, and he was righteous.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're trying to live a righteous life and we come across that temptation, we shouldn't stand there and think we're as righteous as him. We can withstand it just like he did. We need to try to get out of it.
That's right.
So
he probably felt, you know, I have moved my family here. And I'm sure there are people who move to places where maybe there's not a good, strong church, and there is a lot of, you know, sometimes we choose a church because there's a lot of kids there, a lot of teenagers. We've got teenagers, and we want our teenagers to have a lot of teenagers. I've known personally of some congregations, some liberal, some not. They had a large congregation. They had a lot of teenagers, but they had a lot of unwed mothers.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of sexual activity.
Right.
And in fact, there is a church that it was rampant, but it wasn't known
mm-hmm.
until many years later. And it all came out. One of the couples did get pregnant, and they repented and made their thing right. But they don't. The kids won't tell on each other. So just because your kids are going and they're doing nothing with everything they do is kids from church. That is no 100% guarantee that what those kids are doing. This one place, the kids would go, and one of them happened to be old enough to rent a motel room. And so they would rent a motel room and get a keg, and they'd have beer parties. And they would laugh because they were getting away with it. And they laughed for years. And it didn't come out until those kids were in their 20s and 30s. And then some of them's conscience bothered them, and they felt like they had sinned against the parents, and they felt like they needed to make that right. And they wanted to go to the parents, but how do I do this? So these sins, especially in our time when everybody has cars, everybody has freedom, everybody has cell phones, it's not like your kid gets a phone on your telephone at home. You know, my kids used to never get a phone call at home that I didn't, unless I was at home, that I didn't know they got a phone call. Well, now they can text, and you don't even hear a beep or anything. So these are sins that we need to be very careful of, not only in our lives, but in our children's lives and in our grandchildren's lives. Talk to your children. Don't be above going to check and see if they are where they say they're supposed to be. I'm not ashamed to say. My kids would tell me, I'm going to be so-and-so. Okay. I just drive by and see if your car's there. And if it's not, where were you? I'm working. Well, I call work. He's off today. Oh, really? Mm-hmm. And so know what your children are doing. This is not because you don't love them. And they say, well, you don't trust me. Well, I do and I don't. I'm seeing. How do I know I can trust you? If I just take everything you say at face value and I believe everything you tell me and I never check up on you, how do I know whether you're telling me the truth or not? If you're not doing something that you shouldn't be doing, you're not going to mind me popping in at so-and-so's house or driving by to see if your car's there or calling so-and-so's mom to say, give Joel a message or give Daniel a message. Why would you be upset about that? And, of course, now the bad thing is about that. You can't call so-and-so's mom because everybody has cell phones. And you call them on the cell phone, and you can never be 100% sure where they are. Of course, now some of the cell phones have this thing you can find them, and you can turn that on. Okay, let's look at these words, the sensuality. The King James and the American Standard translates this word lasciviousness. The New King James translated it lewdness. The NIV translated it debauchery. And the NRSV translated it licentiousness. So there's several words there, but the definition is basically the same. Some of these are kind of like synonyms for the same word. Does someone have a definition they would like to share?
If my mind was wanton or lustful, tending to produce lewd emotions. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we need to think about when we look at our own selves in the mirror and when we, you know, this sensuality, you know, is this word sexy is big time. David wrote a really good article in his paper about everybody wanting to be sexy these days.
Mm-hmm.
And that can flow over into us. You know, we don't want to think that we're being sensual to bring about lewd emotions to someone, but we want to be modern looking or sexy or those kinds of things. We hear it all the time in every advertisement. You know, even in the language of people on the street, friends, you know, our children's friends.
Well, and there has been some articles that I've seen, I don't remember if they were in the newspaper or on the internet, probably on the internet, that some of the design of women's underwear is designed to make them have these feelings just thinking about the underwear they're wearing, the prints of them and the shape of them. Of course, I tell you, some of the underwear I see advertised, I don't know why women bother. I mean, the panties are not panties, they're strings. And, you know, I have no idea why that's just something to get lost in the washing machine.
Well, you can also, they wear your pants so tight, you can see what they have.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And they do that because they want people to see that, I think, especially men. And yet if a man said something to them, they would be offended. well, why are you looking? Well, why? Don't advertise what you don't want seen.
And the tops that are now, that are so tightly fitting and everything, you know.
Well, and everything neckline plunges until, you know, you have to wear a shirt under. There's so many things now that you buy. Or I see so many, I don't buy them, but I mean, I see them on the stores.
Yes.
And I feel sorry for mothers who have to dress their daughters now. You have to buy something to wear underneath it to make them, because if there's a strap, it's just a teeny tiny strap, and so many of them have no strap, or they're designed to fall off of the shoulder one way or the other. There's no way that they will stay up and hide things. And then when you bend over, everything, you know, you can see all the way through. Let's look at Mark chapter 7, and remember this when we're thinking about these words. Edith Sema, would you like to read Mark chapter 7, verse 21 and 22? Okay, I know you're busy there, but that's okay. Mark chapter 7, verse 21 and 22. Mm-hmm.
For from within, out of the heart of man, proceed the evil thoughts, fornication, theft, murders, adultery, deeds of coveting, and wickedness, as well as deceit, sexuality, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness.
This is, when we're talking about this wantonness, this, one of the definition in Vines, said absent of restraint, indecency, along with wantonness, denotes excess, licentiousness. And so when we're thinking about these words, these things, if we're doing these things or wanting, or drawn to these things, this proceeds from our heart. This isn't something that God made me this way and I can't help it. There are women who, and men, who feel like they have such a strong sexual drive, one person cannot make them happy. And they were just made that way. God gave them this. And so they have no compunction against doing what they want to do. And they feel justified. One of the comments in Vines, there's a difference in his definition and his comments, but one of his comments is the prominent idea is shameless conduct. So when we think of these things, these are shameless things for us to live this way. And one of the words that is a synonym is licentiousness. And so I looked that up, and that word was interesting. It promiscuous and unprincipled in sexual matters was the definition that it gave for licentiousness in Wikipedia. But one thing that I found interesting is the origin of the word is from Middle English, from so-and-so and so on, and it meant freedom. So have you ever heard the term free love? They want freedom in their sexual matters. So licentiousness, that's where the original idea came from. They wanted freedom in these areas, freedom to do anything they wanted to do. Does God give us freedom?
Yes, from our sin.
Depends on what kind of freedom you're talking about. But yes, He definitely does give us freedom. But it's freedom with parameters. We have freedom to have a wonderful marriage relationship under the parameters of God. We have freedom to enjoy our sexuality that God has given to us and the sexual relationship that God has given us, but He put it in parameters. But what these people want, what people who are involved in the three words that we have looked at, are people who want this without any restraint. They want to be considered free and have it any way that they want it. Are there any other comments or questions on the definition of this word? Before we go back, I want us to go back now and look at what we can do to avoid these sins. And I decided to put these three together because they're so closely related that so many of the things that we're going to discuss really fit under all of them. So the next time I teach this, I will just put that as a separate number. I'll make it a separate thing and put it all together. But is there any other comments on lasciviousness before we get to our discussion on how to avoid this? Okay, who would like to share something with us that can help us avoid the sin of fornication, uncleanness, and lasciviousness, or immorality as it's put in the American?
One of the most important things you can do, of course, you have to study the Bible and all that, but if not, unless yourself get into a situation that can lead to that, because if you, like, for instance, a man and a woman, and I often start talking, and they just kind of, you know, keep talking, you think, you need to think to yourself, this is not good, and put a stop to it, because that can lead to it. In any situation like that, the main thing is to watch out for that and keep away from it.
Okay, very good comment. Somebody else.
I actually had Mark settling down about the heart, and it's because we need to keep examining our heart and checking, like you said, God's word to see, am I trying to please God or am I out to just please self? Mm-hmm. You know, it comes down to who am I going to serve? Mm-hmm. Am I going to serve God or am I going to serve myself? And so often, if we just do a daily check and prayer, in our prayer, you know, to say, help me make the decisions today that will glorify you instead of satisfying my desires, whether they be sensual or whether they be, you know, other things, and not let me choose wrong paths, like she was talking about, whether it be friends, whether it be places to go, like when we were trying to teach our children, they just did not, even up to college age, they didn't understand you don't need to be at home alone, you know, with your boyfriend or your girlfriend or, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, we did the old mom thing, you know. And, but now that they have children of their own, they can see the wisdom in that. And even in their relationships, you know, as they fell more in love and everything like that, they can see the wisdom in that. And so
many times all they have to do is get married and really understand where that leads if they're not careful. I know Christina, when she wanted to move with Coy, and they won't live together. She was going to get her own apartment, but she was going to go ahead and move up to Mansfield when he got the job up there before they got married. And we talked to her, and Coy agreed that it'd probably be best. Of course, he was older, a little older than she was, but he was willing for her to come. And after they were married, she told me, she said, I sure am glad you talked me out of that. She said, we would have gotten ourselves in trouble, I'm afraid. Not that it has to be, but it's a big temptation. And even if nothing happens, my question to her was, okay, he comes over, you make supper for him. He's had a real hard day. He falls asleep on the couch. You go to do something, and you wind up falling asleep. You slept in the bed, he slept on the couch. What is everybody in that apartment complex going to think when they see him get up and sneaking out to his apartment the next morning? Y'all are innocent as doves, but you don't, what does that say about when you go to talk to somebody else about their purity? And they're going to say, oh, well. And you tell them, we didn't do anything. Oh, yeah, right. And so you're trying to persuade your children, even if they are innocent in a matter. What perception, when you try to teach and your influence, you damage your influence. Even if you don't get involved in sin, you can damage your influence by these situations. Same thing with the instance Betty talked about. You have a friend at work, and they have a marriage problem, and maybe you're trying to help them, and maybe you're pure and innocent. But y'all spend a lot of time together, and pretty soon the buzz is around the office. Well, you know what's going on with Betty and so-and-so. And you haven't done anything. So you have to watch your influence. Because if people want to believe bad about you, you're not going to convince them. But we don't want to give the devil an occasion.
But a very good friend and a good man fell into this in New Jersey. There was a woman, her husband died. He was a co-worker with Wally and his man. And he just went over to the house to do repair and to help with everything like that. Before, he seemingly had a good marriage and everything, but his marriage fell apart, and he committed adultery, and then, you know, they got divorced, and, I mean, it's
because he was just a caring man, but he did wrong things. Preachers do it all the time. Everything.
Yeah, Stephen's a very caring man, but he will tell a woman, I will not study with you alone. My wife or someone will come with me. I will not come alone. And we've had one time that she said no, that she wanted just him, and he said, I'm sorry. She was having marital problems, and she wanted it to be private, and he said, I'm sorry if my wife, he said, you can have a woman there. You choose someone to have there. And she said no. And so she wasn't a Christian. She had visited the congregation. Okay, what are some other specific things that we need to think about in this area? How about our dress? When we dress, when we leave the house and we look in the mirror, what am I saying? Am I saying that, you know, I feel sexy today? I want to, you know, I've got it and I want to show it. I want to look. But that we're at that point. Are you feeling sensual and are you feeding that by going? I'm not. We all need to look nice. We need to fix our hair. We need to look in the mirror. But I see women like Elizabeth was talking about a while ago. Their pants are so tight you can see almost the threads on their underwear. And you think, did that woman really look in the mirror before she left? Does she think that looks sexy? Now, that may look sexy to a man who's... Yeah, well, that's true. They don't. And that, you can tell that, too. I know they don't. But what our dress says something. And when we dress our children, especially our young girls, what are we teaching them to feel about themselves? Do we want them? We want them to feel good, but we also want them to feel godly. You can dress your children cute. You can dress nice and look very nice, very attractive, without being sexy. But that's the strong suit in the advertisements today. I think Linda mentioned that earlier. That's what they're advertising, sexy. Is that the look we want as Christians? Is that what we want the world to think of us, that we're sexy? Or do we want to be known as God's children? We're different. Flirting. Have you ever been in a situation where somebody made a remark and you knew that they meant something a little bit more than what they actually said? And if you confront them about it, well, then they want to make you be the one that has the problem. But sometimes the flirting... Okay, it's easy to flirt back. Does it make you feel good? When somebody says something to you and you feel like, you know, I've still got it. But then you think, I don't want to have that. And so you need to be very careful because flirting so many times is how it's just little things. It's not you wake up in bed with somebody that's not your husband or your wife. Just very few people. I knew one man, a gospel preacher, who had an affair, and he went to the mall looking for somebody to have an affair with. He was tired of his wife. He wanted something else. And he said, I went to the mall that day looking for somebody to have an affair with. He's the only person I've ever heard say that would at least admit it. But most of the time, it's little things. Either you're flirting or you're comforting. We need to be very careful with our hands, with our... there's nothing wrong with... I'm a hugger. You know, I like to hug people. But there's a difference in hugging and hugging. And so, but when you're comforting, even if you're not hugging, you put your arm around them and you hold them close. I guess that's hugging. It's not frontal hugging or reaching up and hugging somebody. But we need to be very careful about the flirting and what that leads to. Because our words become actions, and then our actions continue to grow. And pretty soon, like this man Linda talked about that went to just be helpful, if he had just taken his wife or his children or another man from work or some friend of his to help him, to be sure there's always a barrier there. When I was young, we lived in Highlands, and I had three kids. I mean, I wasn't that young. But there was a young man who, he was probably 10 years younger than I was. And we had known his family in Oklahoma. And he ate at our house at least twice a week, sometimes more. And he lived about 30 minutes away, and so when he came for supper, he was there till bedtime. Well, if Steve had a Bible study or something, he just stayed. And I always felt a little, I mean, I had three kids there, and I was 10 years older than him and way farther along in life than he was, but that always made me feel a little uneasy, and he never knew that. But I know he looked at me more like a big aunt or a mom, nearly a mom. but like an older aunt or something like that. But those are situations that nowadays there's nothing. It's nothing for a woman to marry somebody 10 or 15 years younger than her. I had a niece who left her husband for a boy that was the same age as her oldest daughter. And so you just think, where's people's minds? Where's their brains? How does this happen? But it does. So whatever situation we find ourselves in, we need to be very guarded, very careful. My children never went to bed until Steve came home.
You know, Ralph, I didn't notice this at the time, but he called me and apologized. He had something wrong with his eye, and he thought I might think he was winking at me. And, you know, I appreciated his conscience on that. Mm-hmm. And we need to have our conscience.
That's right.
Make sure we're not even the slightest bit trying to, not really, you know, trying, but it's just...
Well, you know, and if we have a problem with somebody, we need to, maybe if they are doing something that makes us feel uncomfortable, we may be taking it in a way they don't mean it, but we need to just either put distance between us, or if it's a brother, say, you know, I know you don't mean anything by that, but that makes me feel funny or uncomfortable. And let them open a dialogue. Let them know, because what's going to happen is they may mean something totally opposite from what you are meaning. And you can hurt them, because then you're going to, it's going to be real hard for you not to say, you better watch out for him, because I don't feel comfortable with him. And he's done nothing in his mind. That was not his intent. We just took it wrong. So we need to be careful. But these are areas that it's better to either put some distance between you. If you feel like somebody's flirting with you or making a pass at you, the first thing you need to do, if it's open, just say, look, you're barking up the wrong tree. You need to move on to greener pastures, because they're not green here. And let them know that you're not interested, and that you're very happily married. And if they don't stop it, you will see that it gets stopped. You will go to others and see that it gets stopped, or we're not going to see each other anymore. You're out of my life. If I have to go to another church, I'll go to another church. I'm not putting up with this, whatever the situation is.
And a passage to keep all of those things about speech and the way that you conduct yourself, the way that you dress, where you find yourself, you know, maybe alone and that kind of thing, is Proverbs 7.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this woman was out to commit adultery.
Mm-hmm.
And she was getting this, and it talks about, you know, a naive young man, you know, and so, you know, Proverbs 7, we want to reassure ourselves of what God thinks, and the words that the Holy Spirit uses here to explain who this woman is, and what she is, and how she is, and what those who fall into her trap, the end of them, to not only for ourselves, but for our children. You know, this is a good passage to turn to, and other passages also. But Proverbs 7 gets a real clear picture of a person who's out to lure someone into these things.
Okay.
And
Does this have anything to do, would this affect the movies we choose to go see?
Right.
The TV shows that we watch?
Yeah.
You know, if you are constantly watching a TV show, and I don't know, there was one that was on, someone else told me about it and talked to me about it because they knew someone who watched it all the time who was a Christian, and it really bothered them. It was something, GB or GCB. I think it stood for Good Christian...
Yeah.
And they said that thing. I mean, they were married, that they played the part, and they were always fighting. And she said everything that was out of their mouth, her husband was the one who would watch it. And he said everything out of their mouth was just sexy and sex. And,
yeah.
And there's a lot of shows on that seem to be like that. I don't know. There's one now that I can't remember what the name of the advertisement is, but it's something about... not normal families, or the new normal, maybe, or something about, and I guess these two guys are wanting to have a baby, and one of their friends is going to have it for them, because they're homosexual, because they're fussing over who's going to be the daddy, and I've just seen that little clip of commercial. But if we watch that, and we feed on that, you know, have you ever heard of anybody, or known anybody, that their mate woke up and decided they were gay?
Oh, yeah.
and left them for either another man or another woman. We've known people that happened to. We've known preachers' wives that happened to. He wakes up and he decides he's gay and he's gone. And so you think, how did that happen? Could it be that that's what we're putting in our mind? We're watching this as entertainment. How can this be entertainment? How can I want to avoid fornication, uncleanness, and lasciviousness when that is what I feed my mind with for entertainment? And so
you don't take care of your sexual needs at home.
That's exactly right. That's another thing on my list. You've got to work at your own marriage and having the kind of sexual relationship in your marriage that you need to have and that you both can enjoy. And I used to say that whatever two people wanted to do between them was okay. I don't say that anymore because of the bondage and the perverted stuff. Anything God makes good, people pervert. And the sexual relationship has been so perverted that it just blows my mind. And no loving man is going to ask his wife, let me tie you up in handcuffs and pretend I'm raping you and think that that's going to glorify her and uplift her some way. So I can't say that my statement anymore, whatever a man and woman who's married want to do is okay, because I don't. But you do need to find out. Talk about your sexual relationship. See if are you pleasing your husband? If you're not being pleased, if there are things you would prefer, talk about it. Communication is key in this area, because this is one thing, this is another thing we've heard from women. I was not sexually satisfied. I had a bigger sex drive than he did. Men have said, she's got a headache. I don't care what's going on. If I mention anything romantic, she's got a headache. Or she's sick. She doesn't feel well. And so a lot of it is they're not comfortable. When you get down to the bottom, they're not comfortable with their sexual relationship. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want people to know. They don't want to go talk to somebody else because they don't want people to know they're having problems. But then when they get the divorce, everybody knows because one of them is willing to tell. And so don't be embarrassed for yourself, and don't be embarrassed to teach your children. Talk to your children about the sexual relationship. Talk to them. Teach them that this is a good and holy thing. And that's another thing. I personally knew a woman who was a very good and godly woman, but she could not hardly say the word sex. Her mother had taught her all her life sex is dirty, so she wouldn't be promiscuous. She thought this would prevent the promiscuous, which it did. But when she got married, she couldn't get past that. She felt like that every time she had a relation with her husband, it was dirty and something God frowned upon. But she had to do it because God told her to. And I don't know how you make sense of that in your mind. God tells you to do something that's going to make you feel dirty. But don't teach your children that sex is dirty. Teach them it's wrong outside of marriage. Teach them it's sin. And so these are things that some of us here, and we have grandchildren that we can talk to about it, we can use our knowledge of that to help people avoid these kinds of sins in their life by having good knowledge. And what it does boil down to is we need to have a good knowledge of God's Word. We need to know that the word sex is not a dirty word. It's not something that you have to cover your mouth or cover your face and be embarrassed to say. God created it. It's good in the parameters that He placed it in. And so we need to work on our spirituality, and we need to work on our sexual relationship with our mate. And sometimes, from time to time, maybe it's just good to say, are we getting stale? Are we just kind of in a rut? And, you know, we meet in the bedroom once a month or once every other month or once a week, whatever your habit is, just because we have to, rather than it's something we enjoy. Do we take time? Stephen and I encourage, and we still try to do this, take a honeymoon. Take 2 or 3 a year if you can afford them, or if you have the, you can sneak off a day or two. It's good. But when you get away, don't just talk about the kids. Don't just talk about the bills. Don't just talk about what the next car you want to buy. Pretend you're dating. Pretend you're on a date. Don't have any kids. And I'm trying to woo this person. I want them to love me. And so these are things that we need to work on, but we need to do it in the parameters that God sets. And pray about it. Linda's right. This is something that, how many times have we thought to pray to help me avoid this? Help me never to fall into this temptation. I'll have to admit, I don't know that I ever have. You don't think about it. Why do we think that? Why do we never think about it?
We don't think we'll fall into it.
It's not going to happen to me. You're exactly right. That's not going to happen to me. And yet, we all know people that it has happened to, and the devastation that it's left in its wake.
And you know, the Holy Spirit puts Song of Solomon right here in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to, like you say, woo our mate, to give them self-esteem, to talk about how you love them, to build up, you know, and say what you enjoy about them. And so as women, we want that from them, and
mm-hmm.
we, you know, start yin, yin, yin when they don't, you know, when they don't make us feel that way.
Okay.
But you find out what they might enjoy and what would make them feel good and everything. And that's our part. And but just words of I love you for that, and, you know, I really appreciate that, and all those kinds of things. Well, in anything, whether it's something around the house or whatever, or their job or whatever, it builds their self-esteem and their bond with
mm-hmm.
you. And so that way, it gives you, if there is a problem that arises, then it gives you more of a foundation to which, from which to grow. But these words and some of Solomon say to one another, you know, it's extolling them and loving them and how much they like being with this person. And, you know, I think sometimes, if we get older, we've been married a lot, we sort of let that slide out of the way.
Okay, that's right. You know, I've had men, well, a couple of preachers that have stayed with us. They come in and they're just grinning, and I'll say, you look mighty happy this morning. Well, I just found a little note from my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's tucked in their underwear, sometimes it's tucked in their socks, folded up in their socks, and sometimes they'll tell me what they say, and sometimes they don't, and that's okay. Because, you know, we like little nothings whispered in our ear, and we like men to make us feel good and feel that we're still appealing and attractive to them in a sexual way. What's wrong with letting your husband know that he is still attractive to you in a sexual way, and that you appreciate him, not just for everything he does for you, but the close relationship, the special relationship that he works at to have with you. Okay, our time is up, and I appreciate your comments. I thought we'd see through this a lot faster. Some of these words will go faster. These I wanted to work on because this is something so prevalent today. And we'll start on idolatry, sins pertaining to worship of God, and hopefully we will finish that section. I don't think that will take us that long. I didn't think this one would take this long. So anyway, we'll kind of see what happens. Linda, would you dismiss us, please?